Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Vishnu Padaya Paramahamsa Parivyagacharya Astatara Sada His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Vishnu Padaya Paramahamsa Parivyagacharya Astatara Sada His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Anata Kodi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Srimad Bhaktam Grantharaj Ki All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Guravani Pracharine Irvishesha Shunavadi Paschata Deshatarine Vancha Karpataru Vyascha Kripasintu Vyazavacha Patidanam Pavanebhi Vaishnavebhi Namanama. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Reading from Canto 10, Chapter 24, entitled Worshipping Govardhan Hill, verse 16. We read the Sanskrit. Svabhava tantra hi janaha. Svabhavan anuvartate. Svabhavastham idam sarvam. Sadeva sura manusham. Svabhava tantra hi janaha. Svabhava anuvartate, svabhavastham idam sarvam, sadevasura manusham, svabhavatantra hi janaha, svabhavam anuvartate, svabhavastham idam sarvam, Sadeva sura manusham. Svabhava tantra hi janaha. Svabhava nanuvartate. Svabhava stamidam sarvam. Sadeva sura manusham. Thank you for chanting. Word by word translation. Svabhava, of his conditioned nature. Tantraha, under the control. He, indeed, janaha, a person. Svabhavam, his nature. Anuvartate, he follows svabhavastham, based on conditioned propensities. Idam, this world, sarvam, entire, sa, together with, deva, the demigods, asura, the demons, manusham, and humankind. Translation. Every individual is under the control of his own conditioned nature, and thus he must follow that nature. This entire universe, with all its demigods, demons, and human beings, is based on the conditioned nature of the living entities. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jaya. Lord Krishna here elaborates upon the argument given in the previous verse. Since everything depends on svabhava, or one's conditioned nature, why bother worshipping God or the demigods? This argument would be sublime if svabhava, or conditioned nature, were all powerful. But unfortunately, it is not. There is a supreme controller, and we must worship him, as Lord Krishna will emphatically reveal in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. For now, however, he is content to tease his relatives.
Shri Chaitanya Manavishtam Sapinamina Bhutale Svayam Rupam Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam.
Thank you very much for coming to class today, and I am very fortunate to be here in this maybe a little bit unfavorable weather. I still made it thanks to the mercy of the devotees and Krishna. Thank you. This very interesting and spiritually entertaining chapter shows how Krishna dissuaded his relatives and the whole community from worshipping Lord Indra and instead worshipping Govardhan Hill, soon to be Krishna's newly assumed form. We can say that the Lord refocused and the villages of Vrindavan on himself, on the Lord himself, instead of the demigod, Indra. We learned that the Lord can appear in any form, a stone, a rock, if he wants to. So he can also assume the gigantic form of Govardhan Hill, if he wants to. If we say he cannot, then we are limiting God. And so devotees worship Lord Krishna, or God, in the form of Govardhan Hill. And sometimes they have the properly installed Govardhan Shila deities, the forms of the Lord in that manifestation. So for the Lord, it is possible to appear in any form. And I was raised a Roman Catholic, so it's even said in the Holy Bible that and the Lord appeared to one of the original prophets, Moses, in the form of a burning bush. So I thought that was pretty interesting to mention that. And just an example, and it doesn't mean that the God is limited, confined to that form. He is not. But it's very amazing that he can appear in any form. The important point for the devotee to understand is to follow the instructions of the Lord. For example, it is said in the scriptures that the Archa Vigraha, the deity form of the Lord in the temple, that's appearing in front of a neophyte devotee, is authorized when properly prepared. And so the neophyte devotee, who has a weak faith, not very strong yet, has a point of attachment in the form he can see with his physical eyes. There are also other deity forms of the Lord that are authorized when one does not have the standard means of worship. If I remember correctly, there is even a deity form that you can make in the sand when one lacks the proper means of worship. Once again, as long as the spiritual injunctions are followed and one has faithful attitude, the Lord accepts worship through that deity form. These points are very important to remember. And after a good amount of worship and grace of the Lord, the deities actually will transfer themselves from the mind of the devotee to his heart. And they will travel with him wherever the devotee goes. It is even quite different than just keeping artificially an image in the mind. The deities will be a residence of the devotee's heart, whether the devotee is in the temple or not. So why did the Lord want to dissuade the villages of Vrindavan from worshipping Lord Indra and instead worshipping the Govardhan Hill? The one reason is that he wanted to focus or expound the true meaning of religion, which is to establish the worship of one Supreme Lord, the source of everything, as opposed to worshipping a lesser, however powerful entity. There's some nice verses in Bhagavad Gita, actually, that teach the same principle. For example, in chapter 9, the Lord Krishna says, chapter 9, entitled Most Confidential Knowledge, verse 17, Krishna says, Pidaham asya jagato mata data pitamaha vedyam pavitram omkara rik samayajurveda evacha. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge. And it goes on. In the next verse, verse 18, it says, I am the goal, the sustainer, the master and witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything. Another place of Bhagavad Gita, it's a very nice verse, chapter 10, entitled Opulence of the Absolute. Verse 8, it says, Krishna tells Arjuna, Ham sarvasya pravoma taksaram pavartate iti matva bhajatema buddha bhavasaman vitaha. The translation is that I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So these are some of the nice verses from Bhagavad Gita that teach human beings to worship one Supreme Lord as opposed to any person or concept or you know, something that we concocted in our own minds. And what do we call worshiping something other than God? It's technically called idolatry. Idolatry is the worship of an idol or something or someone other than God, as if it were God. So since idolatry is a popular trend in our Western society, in this class I would like to discuss different types of false worship or idolatry, and how one who is interested very much, very sincere on the spiritual path, how can properly worship the Lord and defeat those false gods that are so prevalent in our society. So this would be the topic of today's class. I thought it's quite appropriate, since our society is just very, very much unfortunate and fallen, and we're suffering. So there are two types of idolatry or false worship. One is open idolatry and the other one is concealed idolatry. So let me give you an example of this open idolatry, what it is. Let's say I am a very creative person, I'm an artist, and I have some idea in my mind. And this idea is based on something I have seen in the material world, or it's just an idea that's popped into my mind. So based on this idea, I create a statue or something that I physically can touch, or, you know, it's like a picture, and I worship that statue or give it some blind or excessive respect. Or even if you don't create anything in your mind, Let's say you're not creative, you don't create anything, but you really like, a celebrity like Elvis Presley, for example. But you're so much in admiration of Elvis Presley that you make a statue of Elvis Presley. You know, make a statue. You have this idea, you carve his image, and that has a foundation, and you worship it, maybe things like, dancing and have the statue of Elvis Presley, maybe that's going on in the material world. I don't know, but it's, many people admire him so much, and maybe they actually create a statue like that, or at least a picture, and they sing songs in front of Elvis Presley. But this is just to give you an example of what an open idolatry would be. You're having an actual physical object that you created of something or someone and giving it excessive respect or worship. It is based on something you have seen or some idea that you have, but is it authorized in the scriptures? Is it based on the scriptures? Authorized scriptures? No, it's not. Maybe you create your own scriptures. So that's speculation. That's what we call speculation. The second type of idolatry is known as concealed idolatry. That means you're not openly worshiping a statue or an image. It's the most common form of idolatry, and in our Western culture, we have all kinds of false gods that we have created and devote a lot of our energy to. The false gods are money, power, physical appearance, sex, fame, leisure, success, celebrities, admiring and worshiping the celebrities, food, image, self-image. So all these are false gods. And people, religious or otherwise, they give themselves away to attain to these false gods, things, ideas, concepts. And I will briefly discuss some of them. So we start with the worship of celebrities, when you turn on a TV or radio, they spit out all kinds of horrible, disastrous, depressing news every minute, unless you listen to a music channel, but that can also be very, not very pleasant unless you listen to like classical music. So we listen to the news, and whether they make you happy or miserable, you still listen to them because you want to be up to date and you want to know what's going on in the world. I will give you one example. I work with in a fitness studio, fitness clinic. I help people with exercise and nutrition and healthy lifestyle. And then some patients come to me and they say, "I have had a horrible night. I couldn't sleep." And I ask them, "So what did you do just before you went to sleep? What was your evening like? So maybe you can go to the root of the problem." And they said, "I listened to this news for an hour before I fell asleep. I couldn't fall asleep, but then I finally fell asleep, and I was waking up every hour, and I had, flashbacks and some bad dreams, and I feel like I'm nothing. I feel like very anxious and not rested, and I'm not ready to exercise." So here we go, So this is what you get, You listen to the news, it steals your time, you listen to what the politicians have to say, and then before you know, you lose sleep. And so giving our attention to the political news, remembering the politicians and who are of questionable character, and more or less allowing them to replace our time with God. Devotees defeat this false god of excessive admiration and listening to the celebrities like politicians by spending their evenings while reading pastimes about the Lord, like from Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, we fall asleep in a peaceful way and have a good night's rest, and we're ready to take on the day when we wake up. Some people even put different messages on their cars and stickers, bumper stickers, and like, you know, T-shirts, you know, I love Mr. Such and Such, and I despise, you know, Mr. Such and Such. All expressions of either, you know, they really subscribe to those ideas propounded by the politicians, or that they really hate them. So this is going on, and the worship of celebrities. Another example is the worship of celebrities like athletes, and I am very much guilty of that myself. Remember the days, you know, it's gradually I lessened it, but you know, there's still traces of that in my heart. Years ago, I would admire certain, you know, martial artists, you know, athletes, to the point where I would be so obsessed with their lives and what they do. I would study their biography, and I would know what year they were born, how many children they have, what was their first, you know, game, or how many points they scored, what kind of movies they were in, and I would even remember, you know, the songs they sang, you know, exactly the lyrics. I was obsessed, you know, and out at home, you know, I would have all kinds of posters, you know, at my room of the, you know, musicians, actors, martial artists. It was quite an obsession. So I still have traces of this in my heart, you know. I have this tendency to give excessive admiration and to those celebrities. The bad thing is that most people find time for studying the lives of those great celebrities, and they do have time to hear about them. And they take pleasure in hearing about them, whether it's good news or bad news. Oh, you know what happened? This happened, and this athlete did this, and you know, oh, this happened to him. Do you know? And, you know, so all kinds of news we are ready to hear and memorize and share with others. But we do not even have 30 minutes to study the, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam daily. And our Christian brothers would say, you don't even have time to study the Word of God 30 minutes per day, but we do have time to listen, absorb the news, and share them, you know. The closest opportunity, we just share the news. Oh, you know, did you hear that? Did you hear that? This happened. And the celebrities steal our time that could be devoted to reading about God, spiritual life, and therefore we commit idolatry. Celebrities are overrated anyway. Most of them don't have good character, and they're not good role models. Sure, they may be impressive. You may be impressed by some feats, but these are all temporary achievements. Mm-hmm. Devotees should not be impressed by those, nor should they aspire excessively for achievement, feats like that, you know, whether, you know, in the realm of politics or athleticism, that's not necessary. So devotees overcome this false god by reading in the evening about the Supreme Lord, the pastimes, reading the Word of God, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, conversing about the Lord. So another false god is our physical appearance. You know, the way we appear in this world, we have a physical body. So it's a form of self-idolatry, false worship. I will give you some funny examples, and I want to be fair, so I will start with the guys, and then I'll give an example from the ladies, you know. So I want to be fair. So, you know, I work in the fitness industry, you know, so I'm at the gym, and I'm guilty of this myself. and I, you know. So, there's a gym, there's some machines and to exercise and some dumbbells. There's a rack with dumbbells and there are mirrors, big mirrors, so you can see yourself. And obviously the guys like to take the prime spot in front of the mirror and start exercise, you know. Biceps curls, curls for the girls, they say, you know. And they want to see the body, you know. Short sleeve and they exercise and they're happy, you know. They want to see the progress, how the muscles are working, how they're getting stronger. And, and sometimes, they need to, go to use the bathroom or something, and they put their towel in that spot with that bench to reserve the spot, you know. And I'm next to that spot, and then they come back after a couple of minutes, and they thought they reserved the spot, but someone else took that spot. So they are get very unfriendly at that point. Says, "Hey, this is my spot. I put the towel here. You know, you can go there. You know, this is my spot." So they still want to reclaim the spot and exercise in front of the mirror to see the body. And it's a very good spot. You can see everything in the background, how other people are working out, and what's going on in the gym. And they're like, on the prime view, and they can compare, this person also got good body, but I have a good body too. So this kind of mentality, which is self-worship, another form of idolatry. So that's for the guys, for the ladies, it's something funny. I mean, please correct me if it's not appropriate, but sometimes I drive, and I come to a stop sign, or a red light, and I just look around. Maybe I shouldn't. I look around, but the ladies are sometimes finishing up, they're putting up the makeup or something, so they find that time, any time they have that, that's free, they happen to be finishing up, looking in the mirror here and there, finishing up the makeup, and then the green light turns, and they keep going, So maybe, they finish, or maybe a couple more stops, and they'll be ready to come out and present themselves and, go to work or something. So these kind of funny things that happen that I witness daily almost, but give you an idea of the physical appearance is so much alluring, and you can be very much distracted by your own appearance and very much attached to the body. So that's the tendency. And I'm guilty of the same thing. And maybe I don't go, I have my own studio now that I work out, so we don't have mirrors actually. But I used to do the same thing there, looking in the mirror and checking myself out. And these days, and again, forgive me if this example is not appropriate, sometimes me and my wife, it's kind of funny, so I'll just relate it, but if it's not appropriate, you correct me. We go to a store, right? So go shopping. So me and my wife, we go. And then, just before you enter the store, there are some glass windows, but you can still see some reflection of yourself, right? They're not like gym mirrors. They're different, so you can still see yourself. So when it's summertime, I wear short sleeves. So my wife sometimes notices, "Hey, I notice you're checking yourself out. You're looking, at the, chest or the arm." And, I defend my false ego, I defend my false ego. I'm good at that. So I say, "You know what? I'm an exercise coach, I gotta look the part, so I'm gonna make sure everything is good, So in this way, I defend my false ego, but my wife wins, because it doesn't change the fact that, yes, I am attached to the body. I wanna make sure everything looks great so I can do my job or, appear in front of others, in a nice way. So she's a winner, but, maybe by split decision, I still... I give her some good argument, but so this is going on. So she's so good for me, though. She, I can see the false ego. She's right on target. So she's good for me. So the physical appearance can be very distracting, and Srila Prabhupada would often give this example of a car. You're a driver, and the car. You're driving is your body. So you are inside, the spirit soul is inside, and you're driving this vehicle of the material body. So let's say you get up in the morning and you have to go to work and you have 30 minutes. So you take a shower, take your lunch, whatever, and your bag, and then jump in the car and you start driving. So you have 30 minutes, and it's 7 a.m., it's traffic time. So what do you do? You try to get to work in the shortest possible way, while obeying the traffic rules, right? You don't drive and then you see McDonald's sign and decide, oh, you know what, there's McDonald's for $2.99, I can have good breakfast. So you drive in and spend 10-15 minutes, spending your money and eating breakfast. You don't do that because you don't have time for that. You just have to take a straight shot to work. Take your breakfast with you or eat it before you leave. Similarly, there may be someone walking by on the street, and then you don't pull up and say, you know what, this is a nice lady here, nice gentleman. Maybe he wants to be picked up. Maybe he wants me to drive him to work too, or maybe drop them off somewhere. You don't do that. You stay focused, keep your eyes on the road. Get from point A to point B. You don't get distracted. You may be noticing things, but you don't act on them. So while you're driving in this vehicle of the material body, your goal is to actually develop love for Krishna and go back to the spiritual sky. So devotees serve with the body, and they know the purpose of the body. It's a sturdy boat, and it is supposed to get us across the ocean of this material life, and it is a very good boat, and we cannot be distracted by trying to get breakfast here and McDonald's and trying to take someone else to work. No, we have to get ourselves to work. We have to reach our goal. Don't be distracted. Don't be acting on our mental proclivities. They may be there because we're getting purified. So everything is there in the mind in the neophyte stage, but it should not distract us to the point where we actually waste time and slow our pace. And instead of 30 minutes, it takes us 1 hour to get to work. Devotees use their time very efficiently, time management, and get to work even 5 minutes early. So this covers the false god of physical appearance, celebrities, and then there is the false god of food. Food is a very big idol for in the Western society. It's a big one. In the Western countries, one of the symptoms of giving too much attention to food is that every other person is overweight. It's very unfortunate. People are not healthy in the body and mind. And even in their 20s and 30s, they rely on many pharmaceutical drugs to keep them functioning, because they abuse the food. They cannot regulate their tongue, and they overeat, and they eat improper food. This is very unfortunate. People do not know how to be moderate in the matter of using the resources God gave us. God gave us a good body, physical body, to try to understand God, and He gave us some good nutritious food that we can supply to the body, and not to abuse and act on our tastes, taste buds. Taste buds will get you, whatever the mind comes to mind you want to eat. So there's a tendency, enjoying the tongue, but otherwise neglecting the body. This is how, people get in trouble, You want to enjoy the food, and then initially you feel some pleasure, but then later you have health issues, and you cannot function. After 20, 30 years of eating bad food, you cannot function. You need help, artificial help. So if you cannot regulate this tendency, it is hard to talk of any healthy lifestyle or balance in life. So devotees offer vegetarian foodstuffs to the Lord according to the verse of Bhagavad Gita, verse 13, chapter 3. Krishna tells Arjuna, Yagyasi stashinak santo muchante sarva kilbishayahi bunjate tif agham pap ye pachanti atma karanat. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. And those who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. So the devotees protect themselves by properly offering the food to the Lord for his pleasure and honoring that food. All of the food that we eat, we try to eat only food that was offered to the Lord, nothing that's created in an artificial way, like, you know, even energy bars or, you know, Halloween candy or, you know, try to make your own bread even. You know, don't buy bread. It may not be the best one. You know, so actually, my wife is so good. She makes bread, homemade bread from, you know, and we can offer it to Krishna. Make chapatis, make puris. These are just some of the examples. You make food with your own hands and then you offer it to the Lord. And this way, you have a very good chance. You actually will control your tongue and you will not become a victim of your tongue. Another false god that our society subscribes to and falls prey to is money. Money. It's very unfortunate that our Western society favors education that will likely result in a well-paid job rather than fulfillment of the self. So whatever you can do, you educate yourself in such a way that you can have a good job and make good amount of money, and then you enjoy the senses the way you like. So this is the goal. This is the goal that our society really is heading for, you know, how much you can enjoy later with the money you obtain. Devotees engage themselves in appropriate occupations. For example, it would not be okay for a devotee to work at the McDonald's or at a slaughterhouse because the work involves committing some violence, even if indirectly. You know, so it's devotees do not want to accept certain jobs, but certainly we can do all kinds of jobs and make good money. And then if you make a lot of money, open a temple. You know, devotees use their money to sponsor and help grow spiritual projects, donate money to help develop the movement, our Hare Krishna consciousness movement. There are so many projects that ISKCON is undergoing, and so many projects they're trying to develop. So make a lot of money and donate. Donate to the temple, donate to the project. And if you don't have a lot of money, just give a dollar. When you take prasadam, you know, add a dollar to the bin, you know, and you know, Krishna doesn't look at quantity, but at sincerity of the heart. So he will appreciate whatever you can do, and then purify this greedy tendency that we have in our hearts, the neophyte stage. Purify the tendency by giving your hard-earned money to the temple. Keep enough money to survive and have some safety net, but any excessive money, do you have extra that you might use for, you know, let's say, you know, you could use a vacation time, go somewhere, or unless you're going to, like, you know, visit a temple or to a festival, if you just have spare money to go on vacation, maybe donate that money to, you know, to the temple. That would be really purifying. It doesn't mean that vacations are bad, but they have to be seen in the proper context, you know. So in this way, devotees get purified by donating the money to some some spiritual cause that has to do with development of Krishna consciousness in the world. So we cover the four false idols of modern society: worship of celebrities, your physical appearance, and food and money. And there's so many more, like I mentioned in the beginning: fame, sex, and what are the other ones here? Power, success, your self-image, you know. So there's so many. Family, you know, it's a false god as well, if you're not using it properly. But we don't have that much time to discuss all of them, but there's so many false gods that our society is victimized by. And the bad thing is people are so completely disillusioned. They think this is the right thing to do, you know. As long as you make some donation here and there, spend some, you know, 1 hour per week or per month at temple or church or synagogue, that's okay. And then you spend 23 hours pursuing your false idols, and then 1 hour per day, or 1 hour and 144 hours, because 1 week has what, 140 some hours. So 1 hour of that you devote to God, and 140 some hours you devote to your false gods. That's not fair, you know. That's not fair, you know. If you want to become spiritual and love God, you know, you spend more time, you know. You prioritize God, put Him in front, in the center of your life. Mm-hmm. So some people may say that you may be right, you know. You term these tendencies that we mentioned, you term them as idolatry. But, you know, this is just human nature, they say. This is human nature, you know. You got to have this, and you have to have this. You know, you got to have a good job, you got to have this and that. So the difference is the devotees sees what the needs are, not what the wants are, you know. The wants may be there, but the needs of the body and mind are taken care of, just as we briefly mentioned. And that even the purport mentions that the material nature, even though it's very powerful, it is not impossible to change. Arjuna tells Krishna that it is impossible to control the mind and change those tendencies, but Krishna doesn't agree with Arjuna. Krishna gives him a different opinion. He says in chapter 6, Arjuna says, "The mind is so restless and turbulent, obstinate, and very strong that it is more difficult to control it, to curb it is more difficult than controlling the wind." But Krishna says, it is quite possible, Arjuna. Very difficult, but it's possible with proper practice and detachment. So proper practice of the science of bhakti yoga, properly engaging the senses, properly worshiping the deity of the Lord at the temple, properly using our body to fulfill the mission of human life, properly eating, offering the food to the Lord, properly using our resources such as money to help develop different Krishna conscious projects. So suitable practice, and then obviously, you know, chanting and doing the pujas and reading about Krishna. So this all and more constitute proper practice. And obviously the detachment will automatically come. So this is what the devotees do. They don't forget about the needs, but they kind of neglect the wants. And therefore they achieve their goal of life, which is to become fully in love of God, and not only help themselves but bring others into this great spiritual movement of Srila, that Srila Prabhupada introduced to the Western society and the whole world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. If you have any questions, I'll be very happy to answer.
Acha. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your class. You always give a very profound and wonderful class. I really love your classes. And I really learned to appreciate, you know, everyone's class, but I really love yours. Definitely, you make some really profound points. I really appreciated all your points, but a couple points I'd like to highlight is that one thing I realized from hearing other devotees, and you were mentioning the same thing, we have to keep things, we have to be real with ourselves, be very objective. How much time are we spending, how much excuses are we making for ourselves, how much time are we spending on everything but Krishna? You know, so many things, but then we make excuses. I have no time for Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, we have so many time for so many things. And this immediately brought to mind something my brother said to some Christian college students who came. Basically, my brother, there's many college students who come here every year to, you know, maybe compare their philosophy. But there were some college students, I believe, either high school or college. And they asked my brother one thing. So he was describing the, you know, Krishna consciousness. And so one person asked him one thing. So what do you do for fun? And my brother was like, so you're saying, you know, devotional activities aren't fun. And obviously the more, if we see devotional activities as not fun, we're going to, you know, do as much, as little as possible.
Sure.
Minimum 16 rounds. Oh, thank God I'm over. Now I'll do what I really want. And we see that. And so anyway, that's the one point I appreciate it, if your devotional activities aren't fun. But anyway, the main point I want to share is one point you reminded me of. Like you were mentioning the bodybuilders who reserve their spots with their towels. And I'll kind of relate it to this pastime. And today's Valentine's Day. I'll try to relate it to Valentine's Day too. Happy Valentine's Day. And you said some nice things about your wife, so that's nice on Valentine's Day.
I try.
So you don't have to delete the video. So that's nice. But anyway, you were mentioning, so there's always communication problems, like the bodybuilder. You know, somebody takes his spot, there's some disagreement between people. You left, you know, it's, you know, finders keepers, you left, so it's my spot. And we see miscommunication between devotees as well. And so Radhanaswami, this is one of my favorite points of His Holiness Radhanaswami about communication. In this autobiography, he was describing that, you know, when he was in his early 20s, he met many swamis, yogis, and babas. He says one day there was a man named Kailash Baba. He said, Kailash Baba taught me so many things. He taught me what to eat, what not to eat, what herbs were edible, what were poisonous, how to respect nature, the animals. He taught me so many things. And at the end of this paragraph, he says, and we didn't even speak the same language. And the reason I love this is because the lesson I learned is that just because people don't, I've mentioned this point before, so we see that the lesson I learned is that just because people don't speak the same language, that doesn't mean they can't communicate.
Right.
Take the flip side of the coin, just because people do speak the same language, that doesn't mean they can't communicate. If people agree with us, we can communicate. If people disagree with us, we can't communicate. If we've always been more successful than our friend, then we can communicate. If our friend suddenly becomes more successful than us, we can't communicate. And we see this in the pastime of Indra and Krishna. Indra was always more successful than Krishna, so he could communicate with the residents of Vrindavan. Soon as Krishna became more successful than him, he wanted to kill him. And we see that, you know, all our relationships, whether devotional or non-devotional. And so my question is that, my question, if you could like to expand on it, is that sometimes people sacrifice their own devotional, you could say, inclinations just because there won't be no friction with their either the devotees in a community or you know, maybe even families. I think a lot of times people avoid arguing with their family because I live with them. But unfortunately, we don't mind arguing with other devotees because we don't have to live with them. So who cares whether I, you know, am so disrespectful and say so many things? We see sometimes people hold their tongue because, oh, I have to live with my wife, I have to live with my kids, let me hold my tongue. So what do you say to somebody who says, I'm kind of avoiding my devotional inclinations, let's say I don't want to take advice from this person because I don't want this other person, I'm also taking advice, to be upset. So what do you say to us, a person who's with that dilemma and they feel like their devotional practices are going down just because they want to be a Krishna pleaser and they want to avoid, you know, the friction? So what do you say to somebody who's devotional enthusiasm goes down because they want to be a people pleaser? So what do you say to somebody who faces that dilemma, I think, which we all face at some point in our Krishna consciousness?
Thank you, Prabhu, for these great points. I just want to repeat what you're saying. I'm not sure if I'm getting it. So if your enthusiasm, spiritual enthusiasm, is going down because you're trying to please other devotees?
Hare Krishna. Just like the residents of Vrindavan, they took Indra's advice for many years. Mm-hmm. And now they're taking Krishna's advice. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, same thing in our devotional practice. Sometimes, you know, there's so many devotees, so many wise devotees in our community. But sometimes we see this as an obstacle. Okay, I don't want to take advice from Krishna because somebody may turn into Indra. You know, potentially, I'm afraid of that. So I just, you know, I'm kind of not, you know, I kind of lose my devotional enthusiasm because I don't want any friction to happen between devotees, which we see this in this particular case. So my question is, you know, we face this dilemma. So what is this? What do you say to us, a person who's in this dilemma? I don't want to take advice from Krishna because, you know, somebody that's like Indra, I'm afraid they might turn into Indra and, you know, come down on me with harsh words or negative words. Or so I'm not sure if that made it more clear. I hope so.
I think it's a little bit more clear. Uh-huh. So in like a practical situation, you have some spiritual question or like some dilemma, but you're not sure if you want to ask the question or approach this devotee because you're afraid that they will not be happy with your questions or with your approach. Or
I'll just try to my best to explain it one more time. Mm-hmm. We've taken so much advice from somebody for so many years. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes we also suddenly take advice from somebody else. And so sometimes we may not want to take advice from somebody else because we may feel like somebody we've taken advice for so many years may become disturbed that we're taking we all have our ego. Like, how can you...
I get the point. Yeah, I got a point. Sorry. I guess I didn't get enough sleep. It's a question of loyalty too. I think I'll just give you an example from my own life, and because I had to overcome a little thing like that at my job. You know, I'm a coach, so I have some students, right? And I'm a good coach. I've been doing it for years, so I have some ego, some image. Yeah, I want to retain my clients. I want to get more people. You know, so I have my image. So I protect it because it means, you know, a lot to me, you know. But sometimes the students they ask me questions and they train with me. But sometimes they either without notice, they go somewhere else and take advice from someone else. Because they don't want to tell me that they're not getting the results they want. I promised them, or that we went over and we're going to get the results. But, you know, the question whether they're following the plan or not, let's put that aside. Maybe they are not, or maybe they are. So they're not getting the results. They go somewhere else to get advice, to maybe get better results, right? So at this point, obviously, it's the question of my reaction. How is my ego? Do I own those students? Are they like? Do they sign a contract that they cannot take advice from other people? No, they come and pay, you know, and they're free to go somewhere else, you know, whether they pay them or not, you know. But they're not bound to me. It's a question of loyalty. So I feel, when I feel hurt, when they don't tell me anything and they go somewhere else, and then I found out later, oh, Oh, you're already over there, or you are taking advice from, you've been taking advice from them for 2 months and you didn't tell me. So that kind of hurts. But if they say the approach that is good is be honest and say, listen, I'm taking care of this, but this is not taken care of. So I was wondering if you have anything in your arsenal, if you have anything in your school that will take care of it, or, and if not, is it okay for me to look elsewhere? You know, is it okay with me? You feel okay with this? You won't be mad at me or something? And if they say this, that's fair. And then if you have your ego kind of in control, you may feel maybe a little mild, but nothing serious, you know? But if they say, if they're not okay with you, they hide it. They hide whatever they're hiding and they want to solve the problem with someone else. That's not kind of fair to you because you've been giving them service and help for years and now all of a sudden, you know, so they do it trying to conceal it, you know, or trying to hide it. So that would not be okay on their part. But it's okay on their part to go somewhere else. It's just they should try to be honest with you. And you can try to be honest with them too, you know. I cannot help you with this. You're better off go to this specialist. They can help you. Thanks for telling me, you know. You've been doing great, you know. You can still come and get this type of service, but for this, I'm not expert. Go there. So this is a good approach this way. There is a minimum amount of ego disturbance. You know, it's still, you may feel something. Yeah, you know, I'm not good enough for this person, whatever. You know, but at least they're honest, I'm honest. Okay, so this kind of helped me get through some kind of patients or students who are not loyal, you know. So this is the way to take care of it, I think. So it can be applied to spiritual life as well. I teach fitness, but spiritual life, it can be applied to. Unless, you know, if you're, you know, bound, you know, you initiate it and you take instructions from one guru, it is always appropriate to express your concern about things to your guru, and then you know, then the guru will recommend you. Okay? So I like my Guru Maharaj sometimes recommends, oh, you know, try to read this book, you know, by this Maharaj, you know, read this book or check out this article from you know, His Holiness, you know, Radhanath Swami, or in Germany, he teaches in Germany. What is the name of this? Yes, so sometimes he sends articles. Oh, try this article, devotees, please read it, you know. So this is nice, you know. Well, sometimes, you know, we find it useful to refer to also other you know. So it can work in the spiritual realm too, but in the material realm it can also work. So this way there's minimum clash of the ego, you know, and sadness, like someone is not loyal, you know, I've given you so much but you're just going somewhere else, you know. I tried, hope it was a little bit clearer.
Can I share one last thing real quick? You said the students have to be honest to the teacher. Unfortunately, that's not always, that's not within our control, obviously. So sometimes people go to someone else while telling us, and sometimes not. And just two things that brought to mind. Sukacharya, when he was in, when Bali Maharaj was in battle with the demigods, Bali Maharaj died. And Sukacharya, by his mystic potency, brought Bali Maharaj back to life. And Bali Maharaj became this the disciple of Sukacharya. However, there was some discrepancy. Obviously, we know the famous pastime where Bali rejected his spiritual master to follow the instructions of Lord Vamanadeva. And so sometimes people like Sukacharya, I'm not talking about like Diksha gurus, I'm more or less talking about mentors, advisors. That's another category. I'm not even referring to that. Right. So I'm leaving that out. But sometimes people feel like, you know, may put a condition on you. I've done so much for you. You owe me, by Sukacharya. But actually, Krishna says, I'm the ability in man. You don't have the power to bring anyone back to life. I'm giving you that power. So you didn't bring Bali Maharaj back to life. I did.
Sure.
So sometimes, you know, as advisors, mentors, we forget that. And we feel like I own somebody, like you said. They owe me. And so one other last pastime, I wrote it down. Maybe you could look at this pastime. Long story short, Daksha, he gave advice to his children, 11,000 children, I believe. Yeah. And he says, perform austerities in the forest so you could populate the universe, you know, just so you can engage in sex and populate the universe. So Narada Muni, he didn't go to Daksha. He didn't ask for his consent. He just saw Daksha's sons perform austerities in the forest, and he gave them different advice. You know, why don't you become renunciates? You know, why are you spending all these austerities just to populate the universe? Become renounced. And Daksha Shans ended up listening to Narada Muni. And so there was some disagreement. And usually, like I said, when people disagree with us, there's some miscommunication. So Daksha, this is in a Sixth Canto, chapter 5, verse 44. There's many verses similar to that. But Daksha is described that Daksha began to, you know, curse Narada Muni, you know, just insulting, cursing him and stuff, etc. And Narada Muni, he was very satisfied, and he didn't curse Daksha back. Now, people may argue, well, it's easy for Narada Muni not to curse Daksha back because the sons of Daksha listen to him and not Daksha. But Narada Muni was put in a similar situation previous to this council. In the fifth council, chapter 1, verse 21, it describes that Narada Muni was in a similar situation. But long story short, Narada Muni gave advice to a prince, Prince Priyavarta. Prince Priyavarta, you should become a renunciate. Don't inherit the kingdom from your father, Manu. So I am Bhuva Manu. And so he gave him this advice. So Priyavarta, he was going to follow the advice of Narada Muni. However, Lord Brahma intervened, and he told Priyavarta, my dear Priyavarta, it's a long story, there's many profound lessons, but basically Lord Brahma says, you know, real renunciation means that you don't own anything. So everyone's renounced. So even if you're married, you don't own, you know, you don't own your wife, mm-hmm. you don't own your kids, you don't own your palace. So you're always situated in renunciation.
Exactly.
So we need responsible kings. We need responsible leaders. So I want you to become the king and inherit the property from your father. And so Priyavarta winded up listening to Lord Brahma's advice instead of Narada Muni. And that's why I love this pastime. It describes, like I said, in the fifth canto, chapter 1, verse 21, that Narada Muni, he did not hold any resentment against Lord Brahma. Because that's the tendency when somebody disagrees with us, we hold resentment against them. Just like Daksha held resentment against Narada Muni. So we see in this pastime that it doesn't matter whether people come to us or honest or not honest. In the end, you know, we're Krishna's instruments. We're not doing anything for anyone. And so that's why, you know, so we see this as a cause of miscommunication when people think they're doing something for other people. Mm-hmm. And therefore we see them a lot of, so Narada, that's why I appreciate Narada Muni. He was put in the same situation like Daksha, but he responded with more integrity than Daksha because he had these good qualities. And anyway, that's some points I like to share and keep in mind for my own peace of mind and how I can communicate with others more, that I'm not doing anything for anyone. And so anyways, thanks for allowing me to share. So, thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.